Hey, you want to spice things up in the bedroom and boost your sexual performance and do it naturally without nasty prescription drugs? You gotta check out this stuff, Joy Mode. It's a powder. You put it in water, or if you're like me and you're a savage, you can dry powder into your mouth. Contains clinically supported doses of L-citrulline, arginine, yohimbine, and vitamin C. So after taking this stuff called their Sexual Performance Booster, again by Joy Mode, your blood levels of arginine and yohimbine increase, and that directly promotes nitric oxide production, penile tissue relaxation, and increased drive. Well, the antioxidant action of vitamin C protects the nitric oxide from oxidative degradation, which then enhances the blood flow promoting activity of the nitric oxide. They thought of everything. They're super smart over at Joy Mode, and collectively these effects enhance sex drive and blood flow naturally to the penis or to the clitoris. My wife takes it too. It's amazing. You get better orgasms, better blood flow. You can kiss nasty prescription medications goodbye and have natural guilt-free energy for boosting your sexual performance. You can get 20% off your first order from Joy Mode. How? Go to usejoymode.com/greenfield. That's usejoymode.com/greenfield. J-O-Y. Usejoymode.com/greenfield. They'll give you 20% off your first order. Last night, I got my shipment in. That's right. Paleo Valley sent me their fermented meat sticks, which are amazing. They're these beef sticks. I gave a few to some of my friends already, which they love. I actually interviewed Stephen Gundry on my podcast, and he talked about how when you look at a lot of these blue zones, the ones that are the highest ranking in terms of longevity eat meat, but the meat that they eat is actually fermented. And that's exactly what they've done with Paleo Valley. They've actually taken really good grass-fed, grass-finished beef. They've fermented, which naturally introduces gut-friendly probiotics, but more importantly, breaks down a lot of the sugars that would normally cause meat to be harmful, concentrates the vitamins, makes it more digestible, and they have fantastic flavors. They got the original. They've got one that's like a summer sausage. They have a garlic sausage. They have a teriyaki. It's probably my favorite. And you can now get your hands on fermented beef sticks that basically blow that Slim Jim beef jerky out of the water. So check out paleovalley.com/Ben. That's paleovalley.com/Ben to try out these beef sticks and get 15% off your order. Not just beef sticks, fermented beef sticks. Well, if you're tired of spending hours on cardio with minimal results, then listen up, because I got a game-changing fitness breakthrough for you. The Carol Bike, science-backed, time-saving solution trusted by experts for optimizing health and longevity. They use this special form of a workout called a rehit, which allows you to achieve superior health and fitness benefits compared to regular cardio in 90% less time. That's amazing. That's a lot of time, 90%. Studies show that by doing Carol's 5-minute workout just 3 times a week, you can improve your fitness by 12%, reduce your risk of type 2 diabetes by 62%, and even wind back your internal body clock by 10 years. The science is clear. Carol Bike is your ticket to a healthier and more vibrant life. You got to try it to believe it and to see what I'm saying. I mean, it's not like a walk in the park. When you're pushing hard in those intervals, you're pushing, but then it's just like over and it's done and it walks you through it. It's very motivating. It's 5 feet away from me right now. It's right here in my office. My cool little exercise toy in my office. So you get $250 off your Carol Bike. You don't have to wait any longer. You can join over 25,000 riders and visit carolbike.com today. carolbike.com.
Welcome to the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast. We provide you with everything you need to know for total performance, fat loss, recovery, digestion, sleep, brain, and hormone optimization. So whether you're an Ironman triathlete or you just want to shed a few pounds, get ready for non-run-of-the-mill cutting-edge content from BenGreenfieldFitness.com.
So biohacking an unbeatable environment is what I'm going to talk to you about today. And before I scare anyone away with the term biohacking, I think a lot of times we hear that word and we conjure up images of, like, you know, some guy with electrodes attached to his head or putting like 8 sticks of butter and a dead chicken and whatever else into your morning cup of coffee. And really all biohacking is it's just tweaking your environment or tweaking your biology to make yourself more efficient or to allow your body to do something more quickly or better perform whatever it is that you want to do. And a big, big part of biohacking is your environment. Frankly, a lot of us spend our day-to-day routine experiencing things like brain fog, slow cognitive performance, weak reaction times, etc. And it's because our kitchens, our bedrooms, our bathrooms, our offices, our gyms, they're not tweaked to really enhance physical performance or mental performance. And in many cases, they're holding us back. So what I'm going to do today, and this is going to be fun. I never like to give the same talk twice, so this will be a new one for me. And what I want to show you guys today is just like everything that you can do in your home and your office and your workout environment, as far as like little tweaks that you can introduce to make yourself just that much better, right? To get that 5%, that 10%, in some cases even more than that, advantage. So I will allow ample time for Q&A afterwards. For anything that I show on the slide, as well as anything you guys want to talk about after. So let's just jump right in. Oh, and resources. I made a resource page for you at bengreenfieldfitness.com/unbeatable14. You enter your credit card information and no, I'm just kidding. It's just all there. And we'll jump right in. So we'll start with the bedroom. Mark sent me a photo of his bedroom just so I could use that as an introduction for this slide. Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it. It's very homey. I like it. So a lot of us, hopefully, especially after Dr. Parsley's talk last night, we spend a lot of time in our bedrooms now that we know just sleeping and having sex. But it is a place where you spend a lot of your time, and I want to talk about some of the hacks you can use in your bedroom, and we'll just jump right in. Okay, light is the first one. You learned about blue light and its ability to disrupt your ability to release melatonin while you're asleep at night. Exposure to blue light is one of the biggies in people's bedrooms. And even if you're going into your bedroom at night and you're getting ready to sleep and you're making it a point not to have your laptop and your phone and stuff like that on, as you've already learned, a lot of people's lights, like, you know, the lights in here, et cetera, they're still releasing blue light. Like most LED and modern fluorescent lighting, there's a big amount of light from the blue light wave spectrum. So one of the things that I recommend you do in any area of your house where you need relaxation, this would primarily be the bedroom, is get lights that don't have the blue light wave spectrum on them. The ones that I have in my house, they're made by a company called Lighting Science. They're called Goodnight Sleep Bulbs. And they've eliminated all of the blue light from the spectrum, and I can just plug those into the sockets in the bedroom. The other thing that you can do, if you want, that works a little bit similarly, is infrared. You can get a fancy infrared lamp like this, and you can also buy a cheaper infrared bulb off of like Amazon for $10. And these infrared lights, they're like warming heat lamps. They're like what a farmer would use to hatch chicks or something, right? You chain an egg to keep it warm. You can put it next to your bed. You can plug one of these up above your bed at night. But it's really cool. They've done studies. They did this really interesting study in athletes where they exposed them to infrared light before they went to bed at night. And they increased sleep time by almost 20 minutes in the morning just by basking in this infrared glow. So you kind of get double benefit, a double whammy. You eliminate blue light when you use red light in your bedroom. And if you get one of these infrared lamps or an infrared light and you shine it on your body, like as you're reading a book or doing whatever you're doing in bed at night before you go to sleep, it has that added effect of eliminating blue light and helping you sleep longer in the morning. So the lighting in your room and adjusting the lighting in your room is really important. Somebody asked a really good question last night during Dr. Parsley's presentation about what do you do if you wake up at night and you got to go to the bathroom or whatever and you don't want to disrupt your circadian rhythm, right, by flipping on the light in your house and getting exposed to blue light. This works really well for that too. Like if you need to see your way into the bathroom or you need to flip a light on next to your bed, you keep one of these little infrared lamps on, you put that on and you get no blue light. You get no disruption of your sleep cycles when you get up at night to go to the bathroom. So just a super simple fix. And again, you can jump into that game for $9-$10 off of Amazon for an infrared bulb. This is another really important one. and one that I just introduced recently, the mattress. And I was actually talking last night at dinner to a few guys about mattresses and how much they affect your sleep and your health. How many of you in here are familiar with electromagnetic fields, like Wi-Fi routers, cell phones, and how there's a lot of talk nowadays about being kind of careful with that stuff, about its potential for being a carcinogen, for disrupting the electrochemical gradient in your cells, things along those lines. Well, mattresses that have springs in them, they act as very efficient EMF conductors. So if you've got a lot of power circulating in your bedroom, if you have like a Wi-Fi router on, if your cell phone's on, whatever, those spring coils can act as EMF transmitters. So going out of your way to find a mattress that doesn't have springs in it is actually a pretty good move. And there's a few other things to think about with your mattress too. 68 degrees was, I think, the number that got thrown out by Dr. Parsi last night as far as your optimal sleep temperature. If you sleep on a memory foam mattress, anybody sleep on a memory foam mattress? Synthetic memory foam stores heat. And there are forms of memory foam, and there's some companies out there. I'm sleeping on what's called an Essentia mattress now. But those memory foams do not actually store heat or release heat, so your body stays at a cooler temperature while you're asleep. There's also, if you're getting an organic mattress, like organic cotton mattress, you're going to avoid a lot of the formaldehydes and the benzenes and the other endocrine disruptors that you'll find in a lot of other mattresses. So there are a multitude of different organic mattress companies out there. There's one website, I think it's called thecleanbedroom.com, where you can get like linen, sheets, pillowcases, stuff like that. But looking around at your bedroom, what you're sleeping on, that's really important too. And I think an organic mattress, just because you spend 8 to 9 hours a night sleeping, right? Exactly. So make sure that you sleep on the right thing. Biomat is another really interesting one. How many of you have spent time in an infrared sauna? You've heard of like infrared saunas before for enhancing recovery. The idea is that they're supposed to increase growth hormone. Infrared is a form of light that penetrates about 6 to 8 inches into human tissue. So it increases blood flow, it increases your cardiovascular capacity, but it's tough to actually have an infrared sauna at your house. A lot of gyms and spas have these type of things, and there's this one really dorky one I think you can get for your house where you get inside this tube and your head's sticking out, and it's really kind of cool. But the biomat is what I use. This is a mat that actually releases infrared waves. You can get them for anything from like $400 up to like this flagship big model that like dogs and kids and people can all be on at the same time. And that's like $1,600, $1,700. But it's an infrared mat that releases infrared waves. Very good for like sitting and working on your laptop during the day, or if you're lying on your stomach for a little while, kind of back and forth as you're working. It's good for taking naps on. It's a little bit hard, so I don't recommend sleeping on it all night. But it's very, very therapeutic for healing and recovering, especially for athletes. And it also releases negative ions. Very, very similar to what you're going to get released if you were to ground or earth. Anybody here use like a grounding mat or an earthing mat? Or have you heard of those? They were made very popular by Tour de France cyclists who were using them in between stages to recover more quickly. Well, this is the same concept. This releases those same negative ions. And especially if you're around a lot of positive ions during the day. Positive ions are what would get released by the things I was talking about earlier, like Wi-Fi routers, cell phones, etc. Your cells are designed to work on a specific electrochemical gradient, about 70 to 80 millivolts. So if you're getting bombarded with positive ions all day long, typically what happens is that gradient drops down to about 30 to 40 millivolts. And that disrupts your metabolic function. It disrupts the ability of the cells to operate properly. So exposure to negative ions, and this would especially be after airline travel, after a lot of time spent around electronics, anything that exposes you to a high amount of positive ions, getting in touch with the planet Earth, like that yoga that we did outside in our bare feet on the ground, that was really, really good stuff. This is kind of similar to that, except on steroids. You're just basically laying on this bed of negative ions. So some kind of grounding mat, earthing mat. I like the biomat because it combines the infrared with negative ions. Works really well too. A few other things for the bedroom. There were certain formulas that Doc Parsley brought up last night. GABA, gamma aminobutyric acid, is an inhibitory neurotransmitter that helps you to fall asleep. And he actually mentioned that as something that he was going to put into his sleep formula, I think. He's not here, so now I can totally bash him. GABA is a big molecule. It's not supposed to be able to cross the blood-brain barrier. If it does cross the blood-brain barrier, it reflects issues with the integrity of your blood-brain barrier. And a lot of times you'll see people with neural inflammation, which can be created from like food allergies. Gluten is a big trigger for that kind of stuff. Again, a lot of exposure to electronics can cause it. The problem is GABA should not be able to cross the blood-brain barrier. Your brain's supposed to make it, and it's supposed to stay up there in your head. I like passion flower because it's an herb that causes your body to make its own GABA. What this works really well for, and I keep this next to my bed at night, is if you wake up at like 3 or 4 a.m., how many of you in here wake up early in the morning and it's like you're kind of on the cusp of, should I just get out of bed and start my day? Or, you know, should I try to get more sleep? Passion flower helps you fall back asleep for another 2 or 3 hours. It just causes your brain to release this dump of inhibitory neurotransmitters. Super simple. You can get droplets off of Amazon, dissolve it under your tongue for about 60 to 90 seconds, let it sit there, and then just fall back asleep. So passion flower is one that I keep in my bedroom. Another one, and again, I don't use it before bed. I use it if I wake up in the morning. And then lavender is another really good one. Lavender, totally natural essential oil. You know, I first discovered this when we started giving it to our kids or little babies to help them sleep at night. But sprinkling a little bit of lavender on your pillow or on the back of your neck can be really, really good, especially at night, to help you sleep. So I'm a big fan of lavender as another oil. Passion flower and lavender are two just totally natural herbs that I find really relaxing. Incidentally, lavender, you can also you can rub it into the bottom of your feet. Any of these essential oils get really good absorption on the bottom of your feet. So like lavender, frankincense, lemon balm, any of these are very, very calming, soothing oils that are great for the bedroom. Pulsed electromagnetic field therapy. So this is kind of a cool device. We were just talking about earthing and grounding. The earth actually emits this Hertz frequency. It's called a Schumann resonance. Has anybody in here heard of the Schumann resonance? It's what you're getting exposed to when you're grounding or earthing or when you're in touch with the planet. This PEMF device, and there's a variety of different devices out there that are used for healing injuries, especially for bones and connective tissue, it releases that same Schumann frequency. So I keep a PEMF device on hand for two things. One, to heal injuries faster. If you get a PEMF device, it's a magnet. You hold the magnet up against an area of tissue or a bone that's been affected for about 15 to 20 minutes a few times a day, and it can work very, very well for enhancing injury without you having to go visit a physical therapist. The other thing that it works well for, though, is jet lag. If you've traveled across multiple time zones, putting this underneath your mattress, and you could use it with an organic mattress, you could use it with a biomat, you could use it for whatever. I don't use it every day, only after I've done a lot of travel across multiple time zones. You put it underneath your mattress, and it helps you sleep, and it helps repair your body while you sleep. They're called pulsed electromagnetic field therapy. There's a bunch of different devices out there. This one's called an earth pulse. They also make coils that you can wrap around injured body parts as well. But really, really cool technology. A couple of other things, and these are more things that I use when I'm traveling. These are not things that I use at home as much. Binaural beats. If you look at brain waves, different brain waves have different frequencies. And so, for example, the alpha brainwave zone is 8 to 10 hertz. And that's kind of like when we were just doing box breathing, we were starting to tap into that zone with Mark a few minutes ago. The alpha brainwave zone being 8 to 10 hertz means that if I put like a 405 hertz signal in my right ear and a 395 hertz signal in my left ear, then that's going to produce a signal of about 10 hertz and start to enhance my alpha brainwave production. That's what a binaural beat is. It's just one frequency in one ear and one frequency in another ear. And typically the way that you use binaural beat apps and sounds and tunes is you put headphones on. Usually it needs to be a good stereo headset. Don't use the crappy one that you got off the airplane for free. So like a good stereo headset, the ones that you get with your iPhone work fine. And you put those in and you play binaural beats. And if you select a binaural beat that's supposed to help you sleep, that's supposed to enhance delta brainwave frequency, it does that. So I use this one on airplanes. The app that I use is called PZIZZ. I don't remember if it's free or if it costs it, but it was cheap if it costs. Yeah, like a couple bucks. Anyways, you put that on and understand that about the first 5-6 times you use it, it's not going to work. It's based off of brainwave entrainment. You actually have to use these apps a few times. So the first few times you use it, just lay there, let yourself get relaxed. You're probably not going to fall asleep. And then about half a dozen times in, you start to fall asleep every time you use it. So it's called PZIZZ. You set it for however long you want to sleep, when you're on an airplane or when you just like need to take a nap somewhere. And it covers up noise. It plays these binaural beats. Got a cheesy, really relaxing guy's voice on it. So there's that, the PZIZZ app. A couple of other things for sleep. Melatonin. One of the problems with melatonin is it's either not absorbed in your gut or it's absorbed way too quickly. You get a surge of melatonin. And so if you take melatonin before bed at night, a lot of times you'll wake up at like 2 or 3 a.m. once the melatonin wears off. So the trick is you figure out how to get a slow bleed of melatonin. Now, I'm not a huge fan of using melatonin unless I'm traveling because I have hesitations about the potential for it shutting down my own endogenous production of melatonin by my own body. And the evidence kind of goes back and forth on that, but I just want to be careful. So I primarily only use melatonin when I'm traveling, but when I do, I use a patch. You can get a melatonin patch. This one's made by Respro. You can find this on Amazon. And you put it in an area of high blood flow, like on the inside of your arm or the inside of your thigh. You put it on for about 20, 30 minutes before bed. You leave it on there while you sleep. And if you find that these fall off, I usually have to put a little strip of scotch tape or something on to keep it on a little bit better. I don't know if I'm thrashing around while I sleep or what, but I wake up sometimes, they fall off. But a melatonin sleep patch can work really, really well for getting that slow bleed of melatonin while you're asleep. One other thing about sleep, or about the bedroom, really, and this is something I do every single morning, is a heart rate variability measurement. Who brought up heart rate variability yesterday? Was it Rob or Doc Parsley? Somebody was talking about, but heart rate variability, it's very, very simple. It's the amount of time that's spent in between each heartbeat. And ideally, there should be mild beat-to-beat fluctuations, like tiny microsecond beat-to-beat fluctuations in between each heartbeat. If there is, that's a sign that you have a healthy, robust nervous system. It means that your what's called your sinoatrial node in your heart, which is responsible for all those pacemaker cells in your heart actually contracting, it's responding to signals from your vagus nerve. And your vagus nerve is based off of feedback from your sympathetic, your fight and flight, and your parasympathetic, your rest and digest nervous system. So when you've got good feedback from both these branches of your nervous system, you have this beat-to-beat fluctuation in heart rate variability, and your heart rate variability is what's called high. So if heart rate variability is high, and you wake up in the morning, and you're doing this measurement every morning because you have your little app next to your bed at night with the heart rate monitor with some kind of a patch that allows you to measure, then you know from the point that you wake up in the morning, and you can even do this while you're box breathing or journaling or whatever it is that you do in the morning. You can kill two birds with one stone here. You'll get that heart rate variability measurement and you'll know, okay, I should go hard day. I should go easy today. Today's a WOD day. Today's a yoga and an easy swim day. And you can make micro adjustments in your training, in your work, in your stress based off of what you're getting from your heart rate variability number. And you can also use this to peak for an event. Like if you're getting ready for a big event, a race, a big workout, whatever, and you want to do what's called super compensation, you can purposefully stress yourself out physically, drive yourself into a few days of low heart rate variability. And once you've got about 2 to 3 days of low heart rate variability logged, then you can start to tap into the rest days and you can basically get yourself into that overreached valley and then super compensate. There's all sorts of cool things that you can do with heart rate variability. I could talk this whole time about HRV, but the idea here is get an app on your phone and then measure for about 5 minutes. Most research to allow the levels to stabilize use a minimum of a 5-minute measurement. So make sure you're not using one of these apps where you just put your finger on it, tells you 30 seconds later what your HRV is. Technically, it should take about 5 minutes to measure, to get a good measurement. Okay, let's talk about the office. Has anyone seen my stapler? Okay, so first of all, standing, we've probably all heard the news that sitting is the new smoking, and that, you know, no matter how much you exercise at the end of the day, if you've been sitting all day, you still have a really, really high risk for a variety of chronic diseases. So the idea is you don't necessarily want to stand all day, and I don't stand all day. I own a standing desk, but I'm like, I'm standing at my standing desk, then I'm kneeling, then I'm lunging, then I'll lay down on that biomat for a little while, and I'll stand back up. The trick is to be in a variety of different positions during the day. That's why I like these stand-up desks that allow you to go from a high position to a low position. Now, the reason I'm a fan of the kind that have cranks on them is because the kind that have push button have EMF. It's an electrical motor that they run on. I try and reduce EMF as much as possible. I tell people I don't have a smart home. I have a stupid home because, you know, there's no Wi-Fi, there's no Bluetooth. I made sure I didn't have any of those smart appliances installed. It's just like, you know, living in a tent, more or less. So my standing desk, plus it's an extra workout for your biceps, has a crank on it that'll go up and down. I use one called a Rebel desk. There's one called a Vera desk. Focal Upright makes a desk. There's a variety of different desks out there. But if you invest in a good standing desk that has a hand crank on it, it'll really allow you to not only avoid a lot of the issues that tend to occur when you're sitting during the day, but when you're standing, you get an increase in BDNF. That's brain-derived neurotrophic factor. It allows for increased neuronal growth. I'm trying to convince the school that my kids are going to install stand-up desks in the entire first grade classroom just so we can get this for kids too. And these are really cool standing desks. They have like a little bar on the bottom where kids can like fidget and move. Very, very good for kids as well. So the next thing is a treadmill. If you want to take things to the next level, you can actually put a treadmill in front of a standing desk. And this is the way that I have my office set up now, is I've got the standing desk, I have the treadmill, and then there's a space beside the treadmill where I could stand. And there's an adjustable chair that will go up and down as the standing desk moves up and down. But by putting a treadmill in front of a standing desk, you can walk and move while you're talking on phones. Once you get your coordination down, practice this for a little while. You can type, you can work on your computer. You could probably even draw pretty pictures on the computer. You have to get pretty coordinated. But a manual treadmill, of course, for the reasons that I've just outlined, is better than a motorized treadmill. Now, the problem that I have is most manual treadmills that you put in front of a standing desk, they only go like 3.5 or 4 miles an hour. So you could never run on them. And if you want to have a treadmill in your home for sprinting, running, intervals, et cetera, you're going to have to buy two treadmills, right? One for your standing desk and then one for your gym or one for treadmill repeats if you want to do treadmill runs. I use this treadmill called a TrueForm treadmill. It allows me to run as fast as I want to run. So as fast as I can sprint, the belt will move with me. So I could go 12, 13. I can sprint 20 miles an hour. Do it all the time. No, I'm just kidding. But you can sprint as fast as you want to go on this thing, but you can also walk during the day. So that one's called a TrueForm. I have that set up in front of a standing desk, and it's a really, really good way to make my office just super duper active. So a few of the things in the office. First of all, you already know what negative ions are. I explained that to you. So know that you can, in addition to having like mats and grounding and earthing, getting inside and being barefoot, you can put things that generate negative ions in your office. The best thing would be a waterfall. And I'm totally not kidding. Like if you can get one of those little waterfall makers, when water splashes, it generates negative ions. That's why it feels so cool when you're out in the forest and you walk up on a waterfall and you breathe in that air and you feel so good. That's because you're just dumping negative ions into your body. It's tough to get a big Multnomah waterfall size waterfall in your office, but there are negative ion generators that you can use. Purely Products makes one for like $25 on Amazon. You can plug that in underneath your desk. There's one called a harmonizer that you can find on Amazon. And even these really cheesy, hippie Himalayan rock salt lamp things, those actually do release negative ions. So they not only look cool, but you can put one on your desk too. So it's up to you. You can go from Star Trek-y all the way to hippie, to the cheapo ionic purifier, but putting some form of negative ion generation into your office is a good idea. A lot of standalone HEPA air filters, which are great for purifying air of like mold and fungus and mycotoxins and a lot of the things that can kind of mess around with your brain function during the day, a lot of these HEPA air filters, they actually have negative ion generators in them. So you can kill two birds with one stone with this too. If you have an office space that you could put an air filter into because you're concerned about air quality in the area that you're working, these things can generate negative ions. Just do a search for HEPA air filter negative ion generator on Google or on Amazon, and you're going to find a few that have negative ion generators. You can also get, what I've done in my own home is I've just had a central HEPA air filter installed. I used one made by a company called AllerAir, as in allergy air. But the idea is it's got an ozone cleaner in it. It zaps mold, mycotoxins, fungus, any of the things that tend to be kind of circulating through a home that can potentially hold back cognitive performance, give you a little bit of brain fog, and they can even contribute to things like yeast and fungus and candida and things of that nature if that's something that you struggle with. From a gut standpoint, having an air filter, a good air filter is a good idea, especially if you live in like an older apartment or home that has like mold or mildew issues. But even if it's just in your office, it's a really good place to have them. Electronics, especially laptops, are very notorious for this. If they're ungrounded, they generate a lot more EMF. And you can ground your laptop. It's very, very simple. These little cables cost about $3 to $4. You plug in one end to the USB port on your laptop, and you plug the other end into the 3-prong outlet on your wall. If you work on a laptop during the day, or if you're like working on a laptop sitting in your lap and you're whatever at the airport, you can pull one of these out of your bag, plug one end into the USB port, plug the other end into the 3-prong outlet, and it grounds your laptop. So it reduces the amount of EMF that it releases. Very, very simple hack. So the way that I have my office set up is just on next to my desk, I've got one of these constantly plugged in. And when I have my laptop and I put it on top of the desk, I just plug the USB cable into that. Very, very simple. So grounding your laptop is a good idea. A few other things in the office. Wi-Fi routers, of all the different things that generate electromagnetic pollution in your environment, a Wi-Fi router is one of the biggest culprits. There's this really interesting study that they did a couple years ago where they grew plants at this elementary school, and they had one plant that was next to a Wi-Fi router and one plant that wasn't. And over a series of weeks, they studied the plants, and the one that was sitting next to the router was like shriveled and didn't grow and was just nasty. And the other one, it thrived. It grew. It looked just fine. So Wi-Fi routers do things to living organisms. You got a couple of options. One, if you're able to modify your house, you could just hardwire everything, right? Like no matter where you're at, have Ethernet rather than having your Wi-Fi router turned on. The other option is if your desk, if your office has a Wi-Fi router in it, get a short or a long Ethernet cable and plug that into the router and then turn the radio signal on the router off, right? So you're hardwired into the router and it's not releasing a signal. A lot of people will hardwire into the router, but they'll forget to turn off the signal. And most routers, if you turn them around, most Wi-Fi boxes, if you turn them around, they typically have a URL you can go to. A lot of times it's like 192.168.0.1. You type that into your browser, you type in the username and the password that's on the back of the wireless box, and that will allow you to turn the radio signal on or off, or even decrease the strength of the radio signal, right? So it's not blasting throughout your entire house, but it's just in your office. So Wi-Fi router, mess around with that thing, get it to the point where it's not releasing Wi-Fi signal or you're using it minimally. So hardwire as much as possible. Blue light blockers, those came up last night, so I won't spend too much time on this, but getting a good pair of glasses that decreases the amount of blue light that you're exposed to. If you want to take this one step further and enhance your reading speed, your visual acuity, and your depth perception, there's a company called Irlen, I-R-L-E-N. They've got outfitters in most cities, and you sit with an Irlen specialist for about 4 to 5 hours, and they test out a variety of different colors with you as you read and do eye tests. And at the end of the fitting, they generate a color that's customized to the specific set of rods and cones in the back of your eye. Now, once you have that Irlen lens finished, you can ask them to put what's called an amber lens on top of that color. So what you wind up with is a pair of glasses that enhances your visual acuity, but also blocks blue light. Now, all in, you're going to spend anything from $600 to $800 on this set of glasses, but your fitting will stay with you for life. You can put it in your own set of frames. So you choose a frame from whatever company you want, like Oakley, Ray-Ban, whatever, and then they'll put that custom set of lenses into that frame for you after you ship that frame to whoever did your Irlen fitting. So a really cool way to customize blue light blockers if you want to spend a crazy amount of money on a pair of glasses. A few other things, screen dimmers. We talked about these last night too. GetFlux is the one that you can put on your computer that will decrease blue light on your computer based on whatever area of the world that you happen to be in. You can put one on your phone, but you have to jailbreak your phone if you want to put Flux on your phone. Flux is available as an app in the jailbroken app store. The other option is if you go to the iPhone app store, the Android app store, and you just type in screen dimmer, there's a bunch of different apps that just make dimming your screen as fast as pushing a button. So because I got tired of jailbreaking my phone, I just installed one of these free screen dimmers on my phone. I put it on the main page where all the apps are, the first page that I see, like my home screen. I push the button and I can dim the screen right away. So as soon as it gets dark, I dim the screen on my phone. And then I've got Flux installed on the computer. Okay, two more things for the office. One is dirty electricity filters. These are also called Stetzer filters. I use some made by a company called GreenWave. And the way that these work is they plug into the existing outlets in your home, and they decrease the amount of electrical surges that occur as power moves from different sources that are having power delivered to them back to the substation through the ground. You'll typically get surges in your home, like electrical power surges. And if it's happening, especially in your office where you're standing by outlets, or in your bed, if you're sleeping by an outlet in your bedroom, this can cause a lot of electrical pollution as well. So I mostly have these in the bedroom and in the office. If you go to like the GreenWave website, you can get a home pack. It's like 8 or 12 of these. And you don't have to put them in every room of your house, but any place in your house where you're spending a lot of time next to the outlet, right? So if you have a desk and you've got an outlet underneath your desk that you know you're sitting by all day, or standing by, or running on your treadmill by, put it into there. Or if you have like an outlet next to your bed where your head's next to all night, put it into there. Okay, so these dirty electricity filters. If you want to test and see if any of this stuff is actually working, there's a really cool way to do it. There's this device that plugs into your phone. It's called a Lapka. Have any of you used this before? Okay, so the Lapka plugs into your phone, and it's got an electromagnetic field measuring device, right? So you can walk around your house and you can see what areas of the house are producing the greatest amount of electromagnetic field pollution. But it has a bunch of other attachments too. Like it's got a nitrate detector. So it's this little prong with a nitrate detector, and you can just push that into any fruit or vegetable and see the amount of nitrates in it, which tells you whether or not it actually has been exposed to fertilizers and pesticides and herbicides and stuff like that. It's got a radiation detector on it. It's got a humidity and temperature setting sensor on it. Really cool device. It's called a Lapka, L-A-P-K-A, or L-A-P-K-A. And you get this and you plug it into your phone, and super duper Star Trek. You guys are going to be totally geeked out by the time we finish this thing. Okay, but your kitchen is going to look like it came out of the 1940s. This is my kitchen, actually. That's my wife in her apron and her high heels. They're GMO-free pineapple there. Everything's black and white in my house, too. I don't think I told you that. Anyways, though, there are things that you can do in your kitchen. And I'm kind of joking, but kind of not. Like, get rid of your microwave. Okay, even if you don't use your microwave, and I won't go into too much depth about how much a microwave affects the actual quantum electricity of a food, the photoelectric potential of a food, like vegetables and fruits and all that. They get exposed to sunlight. They've got photoreceptors in them. They get jam-packed with a lot of energy from sunlight, and you can zap that completely out of them with a microwave. But in addition to that, when a microwave is plugged in, it's constantly releasing an electrical signal. I mean, get that Lapka device I was talking about and walk into your kitchen and get closer and closer to your microwave and see what happens to that signal, even if the microwave isn't on. So I would recommend that you rip your microwave out of your kitchen. You can put a nice painting in a little hole that it leaves there in the wall and just get rid of it. So toss the microwave. We have one of those for fast heating. We have our oven, and of course the broiler setting on the oven works really well, but these little like toaster oven heaters, those work really well too for just like flash heating stuff. But I recommend you get rid of a microwave, learn how to broil, cook, steam, stuff like that. A few other things that we have around in the kitchen that allow us to make good use of waste, but also cook things in more ancestral ways. Food dehydrator. So if you do things like, I'll talk about this in a second, like juicing. Does anybody in here juice like carrots and ginger and lemons and stuff like that? You can save the pulp, you can dehydrate that, and you can use like carrot pulp, lemon pulp, things along those lines for flour or to basically thicken things that you're baking with, like bread, for example. But a food dehydrator, we use one called an Excalibur. It looks like this. And being able to do things like learn more ancestral methods of food preparation. Even if you take something as simple as nuts, right? Like a lot of us will go out and buy bulk nuts from the grocery store. And I used to do this all the time. I'd just buy the nuts and I'd eat them. But it turns out that nuts and the skin of nuts and a lot of the interior nuts as well, they have the ability to inhibit digestive enzyme activity in your gut. And a lot of times if you soak a nut, it allows a lot of that to be decreased. So you can soak a nut overnight in like a glass mason jar. You can rinse it and then you toss it in the food dehydrator and you just let it go. And it's like a 5-minute extra step. It really doesn't take that much time. But learning how to dehydrate foods, really, really cool. You can make your own beef jerky, all sorts of stuff. So I'm a big fan of having a food dehydrator. You could put it in the hole where the microwave isn't at anymore. A good blender, honestly, when I talk to people who are athletes, they are typically pretty far into blending mode anyways, because they've been blending whey protein smoothies since they were in college. But having a good blender around is a good idea. Don't just settle for the magic bullet. Get something like I make smoothies with avocados, and I've got a smoothie that can blend the avocado pit, which, by the way, is actually jam-packed with antioxidants and all sorts of cool stuff. But getting a blender that can blend just about anything. Vitamix is a good brand. Omni Blender is a good brand. There's another one. I'm blank. BlendTec is another good blend or blender. But get a good blender. Don't just settle for the cheapo Magic Bullet or Cuisinart. Having a good blender around, that's another little tool we have in the kitchen. A juicer, we have one of these as well. As an athlete, I really like inflammatory juicing recipes, so I don't really juice fruit. But one of my favorite recipes, and I do this almost every week, is I juice carrot with ginger with lemon. And so all that goes through the juicer and into the cup. And then once that's done, I add olive oil and sea salt. And if this is a pre-workout or post-workout, you can also add turmeric, which works really, really well along with the ginger as an anti-inflammatory, and then amino acids. So you can get like amino acids powders and you can add that in, and that actually turns it into like a really potent workout beverage / sports drink. And you don't have to do like pears and apples and shove 8 bananas into a juice or anything like that. I don't think you put bananas in a juicer anyways. But anyways, making a good, high-quality anti-inflammatory juice, I'm a big fan of having a juicer around for stuff like that. A few of the things that we have in our kitchen. We don't use plastic. We use either these Pyrex containers that's like glass with a BPA-free plastic lid, or else we use these old-school glass mason jars because plastics leach a lot of endocrine disruptors into food. And a lot of times when someone comes to me and they have trouble losing weight, for example, and they're working out and they're eating right, and I can smell them coming a mile away because of the endocrine disrupting perfume that they're wearing that's dumping a bunch of estrogens into the body or their cologne that's disrupting testosterone, you know right away that there's some other things at play. Natural household cleaners, natural fragrances, like using essential oils like frankincense and sandalwood and musk and a lot of these things that replace the common chemicals that you're going to find in a lot of personal care products and household cleaners. That's a good idea. But one of the best places to start is just with what you're keeping your food in, because you're eating your food and that's going straight into your body. If you're eating a bunch of plastics along with the food or plastics leach their plastics into food, especially if you're heating that food in the plastic. But even if it's at room temperature or refrigerated, you're still going to get a little bit of plastic. So we store everything in glass. Glass or stainless steel is another option. There are even companies like Clean Canteen, for example, that make stainless steel type of beverage holders. And then finally, like I mentioned, natural cleaners. We don't really buy any cleaners from the grocery store. I'll give you guys recipes and links at bengreenfieldfitness.com/unbeatable14. But some of our staples, lemon, vinegar, and oil of oregano. Like those are three biggies. Oil of oregano is a really potent antiviral, antiseptic, antibacterial. It's really good for cleaning. Lemon does a good job as well. Vinegar does a good job as well. But pretty much everything that we clean our house with is all 100% natural. So make sure that you educate yourself about how to do this. You'll save a lot of money, and it's kind of fun to make your own cleaning products. Okay, we're going to go on to the gym and about how to biohack your gym. And these are the people at the gym whose Bluetooth or phones that they're talking on the treadmill want to rip off their face and pile under a mountain of kettlebells. Don't be... don't be that person at the gym. There are a few things at the gym that I keep in my gym. Just again, we're talking about biohacking, right? Enhancing efficiency while you're working out or enhancing your ability to get more results from what you do. I restrict oxygen when I work out a lot of the time. I'll even take like a yoga session and restrict oxygen during that yoga session by wearing one of these training masks. And I know they look weird. It's fun sometimes to pretend you're Bane from Batman. But you put these things on, and you don't even have to do intervals. Like, you could technically do your laundry or clean your house while wearing an elevation training mask and a weighted vest and get a workout. But I'll take any workout that would normally be kind of easy, like an easy mountain bike ride or hike with my kids or, chopping some wood in the backyard or whatever. I'll put on the elevation training mask. It jacks up the heart rate. It doesn't put any extra stress in your muscles. So you can even use it for like recovery workouts, for example, but it just makes your lungs work that much harder. So you're strengthening your inspiratory and expiratory muscles. I know these things are cheesy, but it's not all hype and marketing. They actually do work. And this is one of the biohacks I keep around my office. Another one is, of course, a weighted vest. And I wore a weighted vest on the airplane on the way down here. I'll walk around in a weighted vest just to burn a few extra calories, get the body a little bit of extra stronger, increase bone density. You can get weighted vests just about anywhere and use them. I mean, don't just save them for like treadmill sprints and stuff like that. You can wear these during the day. You can wear them while you're walking on a treadmill or working at your standing desk. But I'm a big fan of just like working in little biohacks here and there that get you a little bit stronger, and having a good weighted vest, or maybe two, one that's the stinky one and one that you can wear on the airplane. But having a good weighted vest is another thing that I keep around the gym. Okay, let's talk about some other kind of cooler things. Hypoxic air generator. Does anybody in here ever go compete at altitude or train at altitude? Okay, so altitude has some pretty cool physiological things that it does to the body, like increasing your production of red blood cells, your production of erythropoietin, enhancing your ability to produce what's called endothelial nitric oxide synthase, which allows muscle or vessels to vasodilate and vasoconstrict a little bit better. But again, just like it's kind of hard to put a huge waterfall in your office, it can be tough to hike to the top of a tall mountain out in your backyard. So you can get these hypoxic air generators that allow you to breathe air that's essentially had the oxygen sucked out of it. You can do what's called intermittent hypoxic training, where you work for a little while with the mask on, and then you take it off, and then you put it back on, and then you take it off. You can do full-on hypoxic training sessions where you're running on a treadmill or riding a bicycle while you're actually hooked up to the hypoxic air generator. It's tough to do a weight training workout with something like a hypoxic air generator, because usually there's a tube that is attached to the mask, and that's attached to the hypoxic air generator on the other end. And typically there's an air filter in between. So you'd have to be like dragging this thing around the weight room if you were to bring it to the gym. You get some funny looks. But just keeping this in your office or keeping it next to a piece of cardio training equipment to get a lot of the really cool physiological effects that occur when you're training at altitude, or to get you ready for performing at altitude, really, really cool device to have around. These hypoxico air generators, you can rent them if you're just getting ready. Like, let's say you're prepping for a climb in 3 months, you can rent them and put them in your house for training. The other option is you can just buy them and have them around. They're a few $100 to rent on a monthly basis, and they're several $1,000s to purchase, but it's a cool training toy to have around. A few other things, just for enhancement. Little biohack, biohack your foam roller. If you're doing deep tissue work, I like these foam rollers that have the ridges on them that really dig into muscle tissue and allow muscle adhesions to get removed more quickly compared to a smooth foam roller. So there's this company called Rumble Roller, and it's a really, really hard foam roller. It's as hard as a PVC pipe, but then it's got the ridges coming out of it. This foam roller, I'll spend two times a week, about 20 to 30 minutes making love to this bad boy. And you feel it a lot more than you do a regular foam roller. So Rumble Roller, biohack your foam roller. Get your deep tissue work in. One last thing, and this is especially true if you are going to take that route of like the standing desk and staying on your feet all day, maybe wearing a weighted vest while you're doing it, you'll get a lot of blood pooling to your extremities. And unless you want Las Vegas waitress veins, by the time you're 50 and varicose and all that jazz, you want to drain the blood out of your legs. So you can, for example, like wear compression gear. Like, I'm wearing compression socks right now, right? Because I'll spend a lot of time standing and walking around today. Or I'll sometimes wear compression tights when I'm at home. But I also keep an inversion table out in my garage. You can get these for cheap off of Craigslist. A lot of times, rich people who bought inversion tables who don't know what to do with them, they'll pay you to come haul them away. But you can put an inversion table out in your garage or somewhere in your house or in your gym, and you just hang from that for about 5 to 10 minutes at the end of the day. You can do this a couple times a week. It works really well if you've had a road trip or you've been sitting on an airplane for a long time. You get a lot of compression. So you can lengthen your back, lengthen your joint, and you can do what's called traction on your joints by hanging from an inversion table. The other cool thing is that it forces the growth of capillaries in your head. So it improves blood flow to your head as well. A lot of really cool downstream effects that occur with these things. And unlike a yoga inversion pose, right, where you're inverted and you got your legs up against the wall, it decompresses you, right? Like anytime you're doing a headstand or a handstand, you're not decompressed. There's still a lot of compression occurring on the spine. When you hang, that doesn't occur. So an inversion table, good investment. Cool biohack. All right, let's talk about the bathroom, finally. And I can't wait for number two to come out, by the way. Dumb and Dumber 2. I guess if you're listening to this, not watching it, me saying I can't wait for number two to come out. had to clarify there. It's a photo of Dumb and Dumber. Two guys in. Okay, let's go. We're still going to talk about number two. So squatty potty. Basically, most modern westernized toilets, when you sit on them, cause a kink, a bend to occur in your puborectalis muscle. And that can keep stuff from flowing the way that it's supposed to. It can cause you to strain. It can cause hemorrhoids. It can cause a lot of issues down there when it comes to straining, constipation, etc. So the way that a squatty potty works is it goes next to the toilet, and so normally if you were taking a dump in the hole in the ground, we'll see if I can do this in my tight jeans. You'd get down like this, right? So what a squatty potty does is it puts you at that same angle, except your butt's kind of lightly sitting on the toilet seat, and your feet are on this stool, and they even make nice little fashionable bamboo versions if you don't want this big, white, ugly stool in your bathroom that all your friends are going to ask you about when they go in there, and then you have to do what I just did to demonstrate to them, and it can get awkward. So squatty potty, and they actually shove up next to the toilet, and they can kind of blend in so you don't get too many weird looks. But figuring out a way to put your body into a position that's more biomechanically favorable when you take a dump is actually something I classify as a biohack. And when I am traveling and I don't have my squatty potty, I will get a chair. Like, I'll drag the office chair from the office area of the hotel room into the bathroom, and I'll get up on the chair and I'll take a dump in the toilet like this, just because I'm so used to doing things more naturally. So squatty potty, good investment. Water filter. So your skin is a mouth, and a lot of us will use like Brita water filters or buy water bottles, and hopefully now you know, buy the glass water bottles, right? Not the plastic ones if you are going to buy water bottles. But having, if you really want to take this seriously and you're serious about the health of your family and yourself and your skin, the water that you're showering in, bathing in, drinking, etc., you're eventually going to want to just filter all the water in your home, like with some kind of a central filtering unit. Most of us that are living in U.S. municipalities are drinking or bathing or showering in chlorinated and fluoridated water. There are some places that aren't doing that. Most of them are. So you need something that's going to remove chlorine and fluoride. And the problem is that anything that removes that, like a carbon filter, for example, is a really good choice. Reverse osmosis works okay. But the problem is that a good filter, and I'm a bigger fan of like a carbon block filter, it removes the chlorine and the fluoride, but it demineralizes the water too. It just gets rid of the good stuff and the bad stuff. So if you use a filter like that, you have to remineralize your water. So I do recommend a carbon block filter, like a really good filter, but understand you're either going to have to use a lot of sea salt during the day, or you're going to need to use like effervescent electrolyte tablets, or even get like some trace liquid minerals. You can get these in like droplet form, and just make it a habit that when you're drinking a big glass of water, you remineralize the water. You put a few drops of minerals into the water. So that's a really, really good way, if you're not drinking like well water, to be able to get around the chlorine and the fluoride issues, like a carbon block filter. If you want to take this even one step further, you should also structure the water, because after the water passes through the filter, it's technically dead when it comes to a movement or a vibratory standpoint. So water is meant to vibrate at a specific frequency, just like the earth, when I was talking about grounding and earthing, vibrates at a specific frequency. you can get what are called structured water filters, and you can set up your, and a plumber can easily do this for you if you were to buy two different filters, right? You buy a carbon block filter, and then you buy a structured water filter. Your water passes through the carbon block filter after it comes into your home, and then after that, it passes through what's called a structured water filter. A structured water filter is just a series of glass beads that the water goes through that gets it vibrating again, and it's able to hydrate you, and your body finds that a lot more nourishing and natural when the water is actually vibrating once again at those frequencies that it did when it was traveling through the ground. Okay, so carbon block filter and or reverse osmosis, I like a carbon block better, and then have it pass through some kind of a structuring system after that. Really, really good way to set up your home water filtration system. Just a couple other things, and then I'm done. Personal care products. I really don't use it unless I could eat it without dying or getting diarrhea or something nasty. Personal care products. For example, my moisturizer that I use, I just use extra virgin olive oil. For deodorant, I use coconut oil. For my hair pomade, I use this stuff called Nature Blessings. It's like coconut oil and jojoba oil, some natural essential oils. There's a bunch of different companies that make natural toothpaste. One really good one is this dental herb company. I use Dr. Bronner's for all my soaps, my chapsticks, stuff like that. So I told you about personal care products and endocrine disruptors. And make it a point. And I put some resources in the URL for you, but start to think about it. And that's a very simple rule, right? Like, look at the label. If you wouldn't be comfortable eating it or at least taking a dare to eat it, then don't put it on your body or smear it in your hair. And then finally, coffee. I'm trying to remember why. I know why I put this in the bathroom slide. Okay, so I forgot I was going to talk about this. We have this kind of hesitation in Western culture to talk about anything that involves putting things up our butts. But basically, if you struggle with digestion, if you struggle with constipation, if you struggle with enzyme production, heartburn, a lot of things like that, many times you need a jump start of digestion and a jump start of bile production. And in many cultures, some type of a colonic cleanse or an enema is quite common and acceptable. And I am actually a fan of getting like a good like stainless steel enema bucket and cleaning out your insides once a month. And that's why I put this in the bathroom slide is a coffee enema, like with good coffee where you actually get a stainless steel bucket, you give yourself an enema, hold it in there for 20 to 30 minutes and go. Just try it sometime. You will go try it in your hotel room now. Make sure you get some good coffee first. You will feel clean as a whistle, and if stuff doesn't seem like it's working for you down there when you're going to the bathroom, this automatically just jump starts everything and you're good to go. So I actually recommend doing this about once a month or so. Coffee enema. Bet you didn't see that one coming. Okay. So finally, Mark mentioned I've got a book, beyondtrainingbook.com, and I talk about a lot of other biohacks. It's a big book. And any other resources you want over at bengreenfieldfitness.com/unbeatable14. So thank you, guys. And I don't know if we have time for questions or not or where we're at, but.
Whoa.
That's awesome.
So Ben will be giving demonstrations on the squatty potty. And the coffee enema at lunchtime. You can sign up in the back. You know, the reason I know that all this stuff works is Ben is actually 63 years old. But then I learned you're also an alien, so I'm not sure which is the... Yeah. So, well, so we got time. We got a few minutes, right, Jeff, for Q&A? Maybe 10 minutes? Yeah, we got 10 minutes. Hoo-yah.
All right, hoo-yah.
I'm over here. Quick question. What are your thoughts on the copper compression things that they have out there for like joints and all that for healing or for stability?
Copper compression? Mm-hmm. I'm only familiar with copper being used in fabric as an antibacterial. I don't know why it would add any benefit as far as compression goes, aside from compression gear gets sweaty and hot, I guess, and copper would help you to clean that. But I'm a huge fan of compression gear. The compression gear that I use mostly is the stuff that comes with ice sleeves that you can put ice into so you can cool a muscle at the same time that you compress it. And there's a company called 110% that makes these compression tights and compression shirts. You get them sent to your house. They come with the ice sleeves. You freeze the ice sleeves. You put them in. And the cool thing is that helps a muscle to heal faster and also burns a bunch of extra calories as your body tries to stay warm. So that's what I like for compression gear. But I'm not too familiar with the copper stuff, aside from just copper as an antibacterial. So I wish I had a better answer for you.
Great presentation. If you're just now getting into this, this is a lot to consume because of a lot of people in America from a conditioning standpoint are not used to thinking in this manner or rewiring themselves. What do you recommend in regards to getting started from an inventory perspective and making it realistic? Because if you try to take on everything, you're going to ultimately fail. So
right.
That's my first question. And then the second question, once you identify your objective and et cetera, you know, that can get really expensive once you start lining everything out. So where would you start? I guess it's kind of a...
Yeah, really it's more starting with the omission rather than the commission. And I'm not referring to the enema when I say that. So as far as omission goes, cleaning up your environment when it comes to EMFs, that's number one. Wi-Fi router, cell phone, being constantly plugged in and exposed to signals, that's a huge win right there. Another huge win is your personal care products and your household cleaning chemicals. Again, you're saving money. You're not spending money when you do that. There's a little bit of opportunity cost in terms of doing the research, getting the stuff. Or, I mean, if you want to, you can go to the resource page that I have set up and just, you know, use what I use if you don't want to go through the entire educational process. But omit the perfume that you'd find in Men's Health magazine, and omit the fabric softeners from the laundry, and omit the normal laundry detergent, and learn how to make your own with borax, for example. That's another big one. And then if I could throw one more at you, it would be food. I mean, Rob gave a great presentation yesterday about food. Pair that with what I've just told you about the way that you store and prepare food, right? Like not microwaving it, not storing it in plastic, kind of getting away from the westernized conception of fast food and moving more towards slow food and learning how to prepare your own food. Those would be the three biggest things that you could start with, and they're all cheap to free to do that.
Great presentation. Thank you. What are your thoughts on white noise or anything during sleep?
Yeah, white noise in kids and babies is a bad thing. That can actually disrupt neural growth. And they've done some interesting studies in kids that have shown that these white noise apps and things that cover up noise, they're not good for sleep. They can disrupt sleep. They can disrupt brain development. In adults, interestingly, they don't have that effect. If you live in an area that has sirens, whatever, cats howling, I don't know what kind of, you know, red light district you live in, but, you know, whatever. You got lots of noise kind of coming in through the house. White noise app can help cover that up. It's good for airplanes, even though I'm a bigger fan of that binaural Beats app. But I'm a fan of white noise. I like it. If you download like a white noise app, there's one that's a little bit more therapeutic and less harsh called Brown Noise. Because these white noise, there's like white noise, pink noise, blue noise, brown noise. They all come in different frequencies. But brown noise is one that I've found to be the least harsh when it comes to the way that you feel in your ears when you're listening to it. So,
I'm right over here. Thanks again for all that information. That was great. I really appreciate it. Wanted to go back to the home filter. What did you use? What was the company name that you used for your home filter? If you could just tell us that one more time.
Well, the type of filter is a carbon block filter. Now, I'm not married to a specific brand because my home, I'm kind of off the grid. I've just got well water.
But for the air, but, I'm sorry, for the air filter. I apologize, not for the water.
For the air filter, yeah. Again, I'm not. Oh, Aller Air is the central HEPA air filter. Aller Air. Aller Air.
Great presentation, Ben. I love this stuff. It's right up my alley. And this isn't really a biohack, but you seem like a guy who's probably experimented with a vibration platform. I was wondering if you use one. What do you think about them?
I was hoping you were not going to go anywhere other than vibration platform with that. as opposed to other vibrating things. Yes, I have experimented with a vibration platform. And what the research shows is that when you do it prior to a strength building activity, like a squat, for example, that it can enhance your strength or power or force production during an activity that you do subsequent to exposure to a vibration platform. I just find it clunky and inconvenient to stand on the vibration platform, do a set on that, and then go do my squat. So I don't personally use it for that. I like a vibration platform just as a recommendation for folks who want to get lymph flow and blood going in the morning. You know, for example, like doing a little bit of yoga and some single leg stands and some body weight moves on a vibration platform in the morning, the same way as you would use like a mini trampoline, for example. And actually my dad and my grandma both use mini trampolines when they get up in the morning to get the blood and the lymph flowing. And, you know, Tai Chi, you have like that bouncing movement that you use in Tai Chi or Qigong. Same type of concepts. And I like it for that more than I like it in the weight room for priming a body for activity, just cause I don't find it to be convenient, but you could use it for either of those things. And there's good research behind it. Also good research for bone density, which is why, NASA has used vibration platforms for astronauts. So yeah, I'm a fan, and there are no frills vibration platforms, you know, like Dave Asprey's company, the Bulletproof company, they make that just basic plain Jane steel vibration platform, and you can't adjust the frequency or the settings, but vibrates. So.
Great. I have a question about the over here. I have a question about the water. What do you think about the alkaline water and a water softener, adding that to your home?
Alkalinizing water, you do need to be careful with. More is not necessarily better. It's actually a little bit concerned when I was at US CrossFit and I saw that they had that maxed out on the alkalinizing setting. I would dial it back just slightly. Too much alkalinity is not necessarily a good thing, because your body actually has to release minerals to adjust that. And, I was talking to one lady who bought this alkalinizer, jacked it up, and one of her kids started having seizures after about a month of drinking highly alkalinized water. But if you're living in an acidic environment and you're eating foods that have a net acidity, or you're drinking alcohol, which I know none of us do, but let's just say that were the case, which can create a state of metabolic acidosis, right? A little bit of alkalinity, even squeezing lemon juice, right, into a glass of water can do that if you didn't want to buy an alkalinizer. But introducing a little bit of alkalinity can be a good thing. But I think that the benefits of alkalinizing water are a little bit blown out of proportion. I think that if you're eating a non-acidic diet and not getting a lot of metabolic acidosis, that you're fine just having, you know, drinking water with a normal pH and then just introducing alkalinic foods.
What would be a pH that you would want to be at?
I think it's like 7.4 to 7.6, something like that. And don't quote me on that. I'm not 100% sure of the exact pH, but it's somewhere in that range. Mm-hmm. So you sounded like it's 7. Okay, so 7.0. Yeah, that's net neutral alkalinity. Okay, we have a water expert here. So yeah, so okay. You know, I don't personally use a water alkalinizer.
Okay, and then I live here in San Diego, and we don't have very good water. So what do you think about the water and maybe adding a water softener? Does that have anything to do with biohacking?
I'm not sure. I don't use a water softener. So yeah, I don't know the answer to that question, but it's a great question. And I will find out. If you email me, I'll find out for you.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you.
I love questions that I don't know the answer to, because then I got to go educate myself.
Thank you. I got a couple questions. First of all, you're on well water. I'm on well water. Is there any kind of way to measure the nitrates and sulfates other than having a well inspector come out and pull a sample? Is there something I can purchase to monitor it myself that you're aware of?
You know, I've only ever had a water inspector come out to the house to measure iron, sulfates, nitrates, et cetera. I haven't tried that Lapka device that I talked about to measure nitrates. It probably could, because it's just a probe that you would put into something that measures. So it could probably measure nitrates, but it wouldn't do a full chemical and mineral analysis of the water. Okay. I'm not really sure. I mean, obviously you've got the strips that you use for pools that are pH, chlorine, and whatever, bromine. But yeah, I don't know if
the nitrates are really important. I mean, if infants have more than what it's allowed, it could kill them, or it wouldn't kill an adult. So that's what I was curious to know.
Right.
My other question is, in your book, do you talk about the elf fields and remedies for that as well as the chemicals that we've talked about today? Do you talk about that in your book so we can continue?
About the electrical fields?
Yes.
Yeah. I've got a couple of chapters, particularly on your brain how to fix what's called HPA axis dysfunction, which happens when you've been through a lot of stress and cortisol and overexercising and that type of thing. And then also how to restore neurotransmitter production, right? Like how to rebalance dopamine, serotonin, GABA, a lot of these chemicals that get out of whack in folks. So I have a couple chapters in my book devoted to that. Yeah.
And also, do you have recipes for all those natural products? I'm a huge fan of that because there's no animal testing.
Yeah,
if you
for free on this website, I've got a link to an article that I wrote with all my wife's recipes for that stuff. So she's a wizard with that. So yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thanks. Awesome talk. Not a water expert, but was under the impression that reverse osmosis was the only thing that was going to get down to 2 microns to get the fluoride out. So I'm not familiar with the carbon block filter. I'm just kind of wondering if you could expand on that, why you think that's better than the reverse osmosis.
To my knowledge, the carbon block will actually filter out smaller micron content than the reverse osmosis, like a good carbon block filter. So that's all I know about carbon block. Okay. Is it supposed to be even a better filter than reverse osmosis? But again, I'm not a complete water expert, but the one that I've found to filter out fluoride, chlorine, all that stuff, and produce a need for remineralization would be carbon block. So,
and what's the cost on those generally? Do you know average cost?
I don't know. I'm not sure. So again, I don't have to use one. So, but.
Great presentation. Do you know anything about magnets?
Yeah, they make two things stick together from the North Pole and the South Pole. Yeah, I mean, like magnetic braces, magnetic bracelets, stuff like that. The idea is that they can somehow improve blood flow by attracting anything that's electromagnetic that's circulating in the blood to that area where the brace or where the magnet, or even where like they make magnetic sleeping pads, things like that, and it's supposed to improve blood flow. And I haven't found a lot of success with them as far as like injuries and things along those lines. I mean, technically, that PEMF device that I showed you is it's a magnetic field that produces, but it's what's called a pulsed magnetic field, and it's very, very powerful. It's much different than like wearing one of these magnets. And technically you're not supposed to just like use it constantly all the time because it could produce too much heat and a little bit of damage, just like, you know, ultrasound, for example. But yes, yeah, as far as magnets go, I haven't really found that much to be particularly efficacious for injuries. I haven't noticed much of a difference when I wear like a magnetic, you know, bracelet, for example, you know, like one of these balancing bracelets, that type of thing. But the magnetic field therapy I have found to be useful. So
thank you.
Great talk. You speak a lot about it in your podcast, so I'm going to ask, you didn't go over it here, but when it comes to temperature, sleeping, and also you get it in your creek, I've got a pool. Can you get too cold? Because I can sleep around 40 degrees, and my pool is 42 degrees.
Yeah, yeah. If you have adrenal fatigue or overtraining, absolutely. I mean, any stressor that would normally just be like a mild hormetic stressor that in moderation would allow your body to bounce back to like heat, right? You produce, you go sit in a sauna for 30 minutes, you produce a bunch of heat shock proteins. If you sit in a cold pool, you decrease your production of inflammatory cytokines and you increase your metabolism and all these sorts of cool things. But yeah, if you get too cold and you're overtrained, you have adrenal fatigue, that can be an issue. I'm not a huge fan of too much cold thermogenesis or heat exposure in those type of folks. You can, of course, get cold burns. You can get hypothermia. I mean, there's obviously you can do too much of anything, you know, exercise, cold, anything.
After my long runs and op wads or whatever, I'll go head first right into the 42-degree water, bundle up and just sit there and then go into 106-degree jacuzzi.
Yeah, hot-cold contrast, it's great for recovery. But understand that when you're looking at cold thermogenesis for fat loss, for blood flow, anything like that, 55 degrees is low enough to get a really, really good effect. So you don't have to go a lot lower than that. The pool that I do like cold thermo swim training in is 60 degrees, which isn't that cold when you first get in it. Once you've been in it for about 20 minutes, it's you know, your teeth start to chatter. But you don't have to do like a full like cryotherapy, 40, 42 degrees, you know, freeze your balls off type of temperature. So I've done those chambers and come out and notice a little, you know, frosted dick when you walk out of those. And you just kind of wondering like if that's good for the boys or not. But yeah, like 55 degrees is technically cold enough. So, yeah.
We have time for one more question.
Question in the back from the redneck in the trucker hat back there as his hand raised.
Hey, Ben. A couple things. I am actually a big fan of the coffee enemas myself. And I had all the research that I've read says to keep it under about 10 minutes so you don't reabsorb. Have you heard anything about that? Or
the reason that I recommend a higher amount of time is because a lot of folks who I work with have what's called small intestine bacterial overgrowth. Many, many people have this. It creates heartburn, digestive issues, constipation, all sorts of issues. And one of the problems is once you've got small intestine bacterial overgrowth, it inhibits the activity of what's called the migrating motor complex, which is what's responsible for peristalsis, getting things moving down here. And one of the ways to stimulate that thing to start firing is by holding in the urge to go to the bathroom after you've done something like an enema, after you've held that in. And typically 10 minutes isn't a long enough period of time as like 20 or 30 minutes to get that going. So in someone who struggles with digestive issues, to fix that, sometimes you have to hold in an enema for a longer period of time. If you're just trying to clean yourself out, yeah, 5 or 10 minutes works. So, such a great question to end on. That's awesome. Are we gonna
actually? Well, since you called on him, we'll do one.
All right, we'll take Bad Boy's question back here.
It's tough to follow up an enema question, but I was just wondering. I'm a little bit late to the party. If you had to say, there's one thing that you cannot get from diet that would be involved with peak performance besides sleep, what do you think it is? Like, as an athlete, I take like nitric oxide supplements, beta alanine, creatine, fish oils. What is the one thing that you think that is just like the staple in a very active person's diet?
Essential fatty acids. And they're called essential fatty acids because they have that name. They're tough for your body to make. And so they're essential because you got to get them from the diet. And so I'm a huge fan of either a really good quality high-grade fish oil on a daily basis, or if you don't want to use fish oil, algae, like DHA and EPA rich algae, like spirulina, chlorella, stuff like that. So either a fish oil or like spirulina powder, chlorella powder, or ideally both. That would be the number one thing.
Awesome. Fantastic. Really cool.
Well, I hope you enjoyed today's show, and you can get all of the resources over at bengreenfieldfitness.com/unbeatable14. Also, of course, a big thanks to today's sponsor, Onnit. Just head over to onnit.com/bengreenfield. At onnit.com/bengreenfield, you'll get 10% off fitness gear as well as food, supplements, pretty much anything you want over there. But the magical URL is onnit.com/bengreenfield. Hey, thanks for listening. Have a great week, and we'll be back to our regular programming next week. Talk to you then.
Visit BenGreenfieldFitness.com for even more cutting-edge fitness, nutrition, and performance advice.